This podcast is made possible by Host Analytics and U.S. Bank.
Hello, this is Pam Yancic-Keneally, and I'm the CFO of Kiva, and you're listening to the CFO Thought Leader Podcast.
This is episode 515.
We sort of had a challenging conversation with our investors. They've said, yeah, We sort of don't want to give you that next influx of cash right now. We have a lot of businesses that we're invested in. You can go out and find funding some other place. That was an interesting time from my perspective. Now, we did go out, of course, and resolve that and went out and found some debt financing. But the big takeaway was, okay, we are going to control our own destiny from now on.
Hi, it's Jack Sweeney. On today's show, we speak to Nathan Feather, CFO of Prime Revenue, a company specializing in software and services for the supply chain finance realm. Nathan first entered the C-suite 13 years ago when Prime Revenue was a relatively small company. That opportunity has turned Prime Revenue into a multinational enterprise. We speak to Nathan after these words from our sponsor. It's no secret finance professionals are dealing with some pretty complex problems these days. Now more than ever, they need tools that can help them streamline complex workflows and focus on bigger strategic issues. By bringing your finance organization together on a single cloud platform, Host Analytics automates everyday processes that would otherwise slow you down. By streamlining your planning, modeling, consolidation, reporting, and analytics, Host helps you connect your organization so you can react more quickly to changing conditions and make better business decisions to optimize performance. Let Host Analytics be your partner in leading the evolution of your business.
Thanks, Jack. Great to be here.
Now, Nathan, you've been helping this company open a new chapter of growth over a number of years, many years. So we look forward to exploring some of those chapters with you. But first, we always ask our guests to look back for us and share with us some of those experiences they feel prepared them for a CFO role. What comes to mind for you?
Sure. So there's a couple that come to mind for me, and I would start, with my first job out of college, which was with PricewaterhouseCoopers in the audit practice. And I've sort of over time come to look at that as a great foundational experience. You know, you really get a feel for what it's like to work with great teams, and also changing teams. So teams on one engagement might be different than teams on a different engagement. So you get a chance to not just get pigeonholed into one team, but an opportunity to work with many different folks. And then I also think it was great that was a customer-centric experience, sort of right out of the gate, that you're client-facing, that you get some appreciation for that sort of from the jump. And that's not always the case in finance roles. And the last, I think, really great thing about that job is I got the opportunity to be exposed to a number of different businesses in different industries, whether they were more service-based or manufacturing-based, but really a good broad exposure to businesses in general. Sort of the next, I'll keep going through. The next one that I would say was a key milestone, and it wasn't necessarily a career milestone, but at this point I had left public accounting and moved into private industry, and the CEO of our company was also an angel investor. And there was a company that he was invested in, and they were just getting ready to start looking for their first, you know, real round of capital, going for their Series A. And he asked me if I could help them come up with the financial story to go along with their business story and to really help them build out their financial business model and get prepared for questions that investors might ask them. And, you know, I agreed to do that for a couple of reasons, but one, because she was our CEO, and secondly, because I thought it would be an interesting project. And it was a lot of fun to work with a group that had that sort of passion and enthusiasm about their business. And we worked on that, you know, evenings and weekends at their little office or, you know, in a coffee shop, and sort of going to a business of that size really opened my eyes for the difference that, you know, one person can make in a small company like that and how everybody is critical to the success of the business. And so I really liked that. I was not working in a giant company at the time, but it was still a public company with a couple thousand employees. And so I sort of filed that away in the back of my mind as something that, you know, if the right opportunity came up, I would want to pursue working in even a much smaller type of business.
Now, was that, I'm sorry, Nathan, was that Ariba? Was that, what company was that?
At the time, the company I was working with was Free Markets, which was a Pittsburgh-based e-procurement company. And later, Free Markets merged with Ariba. So this was pre-Ariba, but similar type of business and industry.
Now, what's interesting is from the start, you're kind of in this interesting world of cash management, workflows. There's sort of this straight line of opportunities related to sort of the cash management space or the visibility into cash flows. Do you see it differently? Or again, certain CFOs do jump around quite a bit, but how do you, when you look back, what do you see?
It's not necessarily a straight line, but I think it's all along the same general path in the technology-enabled services and with a sort of focus on procurement. So both Free Markets and Ariba were very much procurement-focused in terms of making the purchase, I would say, especially at that point in time. So the process and the technology around actually purchasing the materials. Here at Prime Revenue, we're sort of not so much focused at all on who you purchase from or how you're purchasing. But then once that purchase happens, how do you most effectively pay those suppliers and do it in a way that can be sort of beneficial for both the company that is the purchaser as well as the supplier? So definitely some of those experiences from earlier sort of do shade some of the thinking and the way we do things today.
I find it interesting when you do jump to Prime Revenue. I think there's been a great deal of growth there during your tenure. But the fact is it must have been a pretty small company when you first arrived. Or I'll let you share that story. But anyway, that's what's racing through my mind.
Yeah, definitely. So I joined here a little more than 13 years ago now. And so it did give me that opportunity to pursue a much smaller business to work in and to have sort of more influence potentially than you might in a larger one, and to really get exposure to, you know, everything across finance. And as it's turned out, not just finance, but also from time to time, legal and HR and IT. And it's the sort of, I think, broad-based exposure that I would not have had an opportunity to get in a bigger firm. So when I joined here, we were about 20 people, and we were sort of still figuring, I mean, I guess we're still figuring things out, but we were really just figuring things out at the time. We had some partners, but we were just starting to sign our first direct customers. So, you know, the finance department wasn't much of a department. There was one other person who was part-time and myself. And so we were sort of focused on making sure that basically that the business had everything that it needed at the time to be successful, whether that was, you know, cutting checks or making sure the payroll worked. But it was a complete, you know, finance function across a person and a half. So it definitely was a bit of a different scenario than what I had been used to.
What led you there? Did you always have an entrepreneurial bend? Because you're up to that point, you were in larger organizations. What led you there?
Yeah, so I think my experience with that very small group led me to want to pursue something much more entrepreneurial. And then I had, I think the way a lot of people move from place to place in their career is the CEO of Prime Revenue at the time was somebody that I had worked with in the past. And he sort of gave me a call and said, "This is really interesting. You should come check it out. We need help in finance. If you're interested, you know, why don't you move to Atlanta and we can give it a run." So I came down. I'm from Pittsburgh originally, but I came down to Atlanta. Fortunately, it was sometime in the winter, so it was a good time to come down, and came down and saw the business and saw what the vision was, and really liked it. And it was just the right timing for me, and a good opportunity to make a change and try something with a lot more risk than what I had been used to so far.
Well, I want to find out, and you've already touched on Prime Revenue somewhat, but what is it that sets Prime Revenue apart? What is it doing? How does its offerings empower businesses differently from what you had been doing?
Yeah, so I think it's just focused on a different part of the business and a different driver for our customers to have success. So and at both Ariba and at Free Markets, the focus was about making the procurement process much more efficient and driving down the cost of the procurement, what's being purchased. And here at Prime Revenue, we're not so much focused on that, but what we're focused on is how can we optimize cash flow and working capital for our customers? And, you know, we focus primarily in supply chain finance on how do we optimize payment terms to allow the buyer to free up cash flow that's trapped in their supply chain that they can then use to invest in their business however they see fit. And so we do that in a couple of different ways. And the first thing we'll do is we'll work with the procurement team at our customers to analyze their spend and compare it to what we've seen in the past and help make recommendations for where and how they can extend payment terms. I'd say extending payment terms is nothing new. Companies have been doing that forever, but typically it's a win-lose proposition. So if I extend my payment terms to you, I win because I hold on to my cash longer, but I just push all of that pain and burden onto you. So where we really sort of help to add value is by connecting the buyers with their suppliers and a network of about 80 financial institutions that we use. And we bring transparency into that process and full visibility so that there's no mystery anymore around the AP/AR cycle. And then because we're able to bring in our funding partners, we're able to break that link between when I pay you and when you receive the cash. So you can control at what date you want to get paid, and whether it's early or wait until it's normally due. So that is really how we help to unlock all that capital that's trapped in supply chains across the world.
Now, as the business grew, you had the opportunity. You told us how small it was, just a team of 1.5 people at the start. You got to architect this finance function, and you got to determine what is the visibility I need to supply to the organization to help it function and grow. What would you tell us about what you've created there, what you've built as far as that function is concerned? And by that, I mean the types of roles or people or technologies that you've used to build it.
Yeah, so it's been an evolution, and that evolution continues. The first thing we did was brought in somebody full-time to sort of manage the general ledger, you know, to make sure all the debits and credits are working correctly, and to, you know, help with all of the typical processing that finance departments have to do just to keep the lights on and keep the employees paid and happy. And then over time, and so for me, you know, if you think about broad finance, my sort of enthusiasm for it lies more on the financial planning and analysis side than it does on the more controllership and that side of the house. So we sort of built that side first. And then over time, we've continued to build out FP&A as well, and we've added sort of points of expertise that we didn't necessarily know we needed right away, like people with background in international or with certain skill sets in tax and the like, to the point now where we have a team, I think, a great team in place that doesn't need me to be involved in the day-to-day type of work that the finance group provides to the rest of the business, but gives me the opportunity to sort of pick up and spend more time talking to customers, talking to investors, dealing with our board and things of that nature. So it's definitely been an evolution of the team, and the technology has evolved, I'd say, along with it. From, you know, in the early days, things like Excel and QuickBooks, frankly, to now we're using NetSuite globally. We're using all sorts of different tools for reporting to the rest of the business, you know, data and analytics tools. So it's been a great change. It's been 13 years. It's been a long time, but there's been a lot of change over that period of time.
Now, just to reveal better the nature of this business, what are those top of mind metrics that you're always paying attention to?
Yeah, so every day there's a couple things I look at first thing in the morning. One is an internal tool that we've developed. It's called Ticker. But all it is a sort of a running total of the day's activity on our platform. So how much volume is flowing through our platform, how much has been funded today, what are the different revenue streams on that. So that's the first thing I open up pretty much every morning to see sort of what's happened already today in Asia and Europe before we in Atlanta even, you know, get started for our day. The second thing I'll look at every morning is our sales pipeline and the metrics around our demand generation. So how many leads have we processed? How many leads do we generate today? How many do we expect to generate today? Any movement in the sales pipeline, and how does that line up with our plan for the month, for the quarter, and those sorts of things. And then the third is what's happening with our customer success organization. And what is their backlog look like in terms of adding to the network from a supplier onboarding and enablement standpoint? And so those are sort of the three things that I look at every morning, sort of what's happened so far today, what's the demand gen pipeline look like, and then what's our customer success pipeline look like.
Your world has really evolved pretty quickly as the company has grown and you've added new people and what have you. But in terms of the numbers you look at, is there any new metric perhaps or something that's been added to the mix over the last few years that wasn't quite as important 4 years ago as it is today? Again, it might be a customer measurement. We're hearing a good deal about the Net Promoter Score and other non
Well, we definitely have one non-financial metric that is probably the most important metric for our business, and it is measuring the, I guess, our success rate against the proposals that we have with our customers. And what I mean by that, and each one is different, right? But it's based on, 100%. So when we first sign a new customer, we'll have an agreed upon objective with the customer that we're going to generate, $300 million in working capital over this period of time. And that is our number one success metric, because if we're doing that, then we have happy customers, we have satisfied customers, we have customers that will refer us, we have customers that will renew, and we're building out the value of our network over time. So, I mean, that's not necessarily something that's brand new for us, but it's a non-financial metric that is the top of mind, I think, for everybody here at Prime Revenue.
Now, we have what we call our sort of signature question, which is when we ask for a finance strategic moment. And this is where your lines into the organization allowed you to see maybe an opportunity or maybe it was a risk, but you responded to it in some way. Now, it might have been at Prime Revenue. It might have been earlier in your career. But does anything come to mind when I ask for a finance strategic moment?
Yeah, there's probably two that jumped to mind originally. One is sort of about going beyond finance. And if we have time, we can talk about that one in a minute. But I'd say the one that's probably more finance focused and maybe is more focused on folks and CFOs that are in maybe smaller type businesses is around controlling your own destiny. So like I said, I joined in 2006. That was definitely pre-Great Recession. And at that point in time, and I think this is sort of becoming the case again today, but fundraising was easy, right? And equity fundraising was pretty easy too. And so I think as a business, our focus was on growth, not on profitability, and our investors were supportive of that, of course. And so we would, go through a certain phase and go back and say, okay, we're sort of ready for the next fundraising. We're ready for the next equity check, which was great until about, mid-2008 when that time period hit, and the recession struck. And so at that point, when we were ready to take the next influx of cash, we sort of had a challenging conversation with our investors. And they've said, yeah, we sort of don't want to give you that next influx of cash right now. We have a lot of businesses that we're invested in. You guys have real revenues and real customers and a real business. You can go out and find funding some other place. We need to save sort of our limited funds for some of our businesses that don't have those at their disposal, right? Maybe they're pre-revenue. Maybe they are, in a different stage of evolution. So that was an interesting time from my perspective. Now, we did go out, of course, and resolve that and went out and found some debt financing at that point in time that we worked through, and then you went through all the hard work of, going through the cost structure and changing some of our financial strategy. And I think all of that made us much stronger in the long run. But the big takeaway was, okay, we are going to control our own destiny from now on. And so we're going to make sure that we're not dependent on any third party to fund the business. We're just not going to get in that position again. And so that's how we've sort of managed the business from that point forwards. And I think it's been good. It's helped us work through without a lot of stress, some ups and downs in the economy. And it was really a change in mindset for this company that we've kept to this day.
Interesting. You mentioned the ups and downs in the economy. When the downturn occurred, how did that impact this business?
Yes. It impacted this business in a pretty positive manner, actually. So So our business is helping companies optimize working capital and cash flow. So when cash is readily available, there's not as much focus on trying to do that because there's really not as much of a need. But when capital becomes a little bit tighter, then it really calls into focus, I think, managing working capital, whether that's through AR or accounts payable or inventory. And we can help companies on both the AR and the AP side today. And so that sort of helped bring more market interest in what we're doing. And the other thing that happened is we had worked with maybe a handful of funding partners to that point in time. And everybody had unlimited appetite for basically anything, sort of in the 2007 timeframe. But that all changed overnight too, and it caused us to really broaden out our partner network so that today we work with over 80 banks all over the world to ensure that we have enough coverage in case some banks change their mind or there's another downturn in the economy, that we have enough diversification that we can continue to provide our service to our customers uninterrupted.
You mentioned a second finance strategic moment also came to mind. Is that something you'd like to share?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So a few years ago, I had the opportunity to expand my role and take on the general manager of Europe for Prime Revenue role. And I'd had some experiences supporting sales and operations, but never led them. So that was a great opportunity. We got to move to Prague, where our European headquarters is, and really see the business beyond finance, really see the business in the day-to-day, what happens in customer support, what happens in sales cycles, what happens in technical operations. And I think it really gave me a better appreciation for the other parts of the business, right? I think sometimes it's easy for finance professionals to just look at things on the spreadsheet and look at the numbers, and if they don't balance out, then the answer is no. But when you're actually out sort of in front of the fire, at the tip of the spear, it helps to maybe give you a different outlook on the challenges and the opportunities that the rest of the company is seeing on a day-to-day basis. So I think it's really helped me to empathize more with the rest of the business and not just be so focused on the bottom line. And I think, it's something that I would give as a recommendation to anybody out there if the opportunity comes up, is to take an opportunity to work in another part of the business, really to understand the business at a detailed level, and that'll help you be even more effective sort of once you return to your finance roots.
We enter the mentoring round with CFO Nathan Feather of Prime Revenue. After this. You want smart, clear, and honest guidance to help you meet the financial goals of your middle market business. With U.S. Bank, you have a partner who will help you find the right solutions to help your organization reduce payment costs, enhance control, improve cash flow, and expand your spend visibility. Our commitment to doing the right thing for our customers at every opportunity has earned us the designation of one of the world's most ethical companies from the Ethisphere Institute for 5 years in a row. To learn more, visit us at usbpayment.com/middlemarket. Okay, well, we're going to jump to our mentoring round where I get to ask you several quick questions intended to both inspire and mentor future finance leaders. What is it that is exciting you about finance and business today?
Yeah. I think for me, part of it is how finance is becoming such a strategic partner to the rest of the business. And I think that's been the case in certain organizations in the past, but I think it's also been the case where finance was more of a controlling function at some points. But I think that's really changing to where finance is a strategic partner across the spectrum these days, and is asked to do more than just run the budget and run the actuals, but to actually bring some sort of value to the table. I think that gives folks in the finance profession just a great opportunity to continue to grow and expand, and even to grow and expand outside of finance if they so choose.
So when you stepped into that, to the CFO office for the first time, the weight of the office was entirely on your shoulders and decision-making relative to it was, what is it, that piece of advice you wish someone may have given you? Or if you could go back in time, maybe you would tell yourself this?
That's a good question. I think the biggest piece of advice is you're not going to be expert in everything that cuts across all of finance. You need to rely on, you need to build a team or rely on others to manage the areas where, you know, you need help and where you're weak, and not to try to, you know, make those decisions on your own, but to actively seek help. So I know that seems maybe a little obvious, but, you know, for me, I was in here and we were dealing with, you know, transacting and bank accounts and cash flows and all over the world and different currencies. And I had not had any exposure to that before. So trying to figure out how do we best repatriate cash and how do we best strategize for changes in foreign exchange, you know, was something that I had no experience in, and the business needed that, but I didn't have it. So I was able to go and source some external help to help us think through all of that. And I think that's going to be the case for everyone.
Do you have a personal habit or routine you believe has contributed to your professional success in some way?
There's something that I have started to do over the past few years, which I think is maybe a little bit different than the average schedule. And this sort of relates to a work-life balance initiative as well. And this really started for me when I was overseas in Europe. And that was, it would be really easy to work from, you know, 8 to 8 every day. Certainly from, you know, 8 to 6 or 8 to 7 every day, especially if you're in the European theater where the U.S. folks are still going strong at that time of the day. And what I realized was I was doing that a lot and sort of missing out on a lot of things. So I changed my schedule to have sort of a normal, I'm going to have a drop dead at this time, every day, say 5 o'clock, except for maybe 1 or 2 days a week. And on those days, I'm just going to stay in the office and work until whenever I need to get caught up and get things organized. So rather than sort of making, you know, missing dinner with the family every night, I would miss it one night a week. And that time when you're in the office, sort of when it's not crowded, when there's not a lot of meetings on the calendar, I found that I can get more done in a couple of hours like that than I can sometimes get done in a full day in the whirlwind of what's happening sort of in that 9-to-5 window.
Okay. Is there a book you'd recommend to aspiring finance leaders?
There's probably two books that I'd recommend right now, and these are books that we at Prime Revenue have been digesting and implementing. And the first is Measure What Matters by John Doerr. So I think probably a lot of folks are familiar with that. And it's focused on, you know, objectives and key results and how to think about that OKR process and sort of the benefits it can bring to a business. So that book's been around for a while, but it's been sort of come off the shelf for me here lately. So that's one. And the second is a book simply called Objectives and Key Results by Paul Niven. And so that's more of a practical application than the theoretical side. It's when you actually get down to the nuts and bolts, how do you go and do that? So we're in the midst of doing that right now. So both of those books are right here on my desk in front of me.
Okay. Well, we're up to our final question, which is to ask you to look forward finally and tell us what your priorities are as a finance leader over the next 12 months.
Okay. So, I mean, my priorities, I think I might have touched on this before as well, is for me, it's about continuing to build out the team. As we grow as a business, we need to have the right folks to support the rest of the company. And we also need to make sure that I have the right bandwidth to spend with our investors and with our customers. So it's continuing to build out a team and to build out a team that is living the values of Prime Revenue and is growing, because there's lots of opportunity here for us as we grow. So helping our current team members sort of expand into newer and bigger roles and making sure we're filling in the gaps with the right folks to support them. But that's really it for us. It's making sure that we continue to build and grow the team. That's the priority here for the next year.
Nathan Feather, thank you for joining us on CFO Thought Leader.
Okay, thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Hi, it's Jack Sweeney with a quick note that CFO Thought Leader now has a quarterly print magazine. That's right, print. Each issue will profile 25 different CFOs. Let me repeat that, 25 CFOs. Other print publications are lucky if they're able to bring you 5 CFOs per issue. What we understand is that you want to consume content in multiple ways. But wait a minute, there's something more here. We wanted this print magazine to be a podcast companion. So when you receive it, we want you to quickly thumb through it and maybe identify which episodes you have missed. We want you to dog ear those pages, as well as perhaps the pages that feature CFOs from episodes you already listened to but found maybe a little extra value from. 12 months later, you will have a library of 100 CFO profiles highlighted with your insights or comments alongside the CFO thought leaders. Now, how much are we charging for this one-of-a-kind 100 CFO profile library? Annual subscriptions are $119. We think that's reasonable. We thought about it a little bit, but that's what we came up with. Visit us and subscribe to CFO Thought Leader magazine at cfothoughtleader.com, where the future of finance is listening.